Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And at this point, I usually say delighted to be with you, but I'm frankly a little nervous today because it's flannel panel. We got the flannel panel. It's been a while. I don't know if we're going to be rusty, if we're still going to be able to do this, but news of the world from a Catholic perspective with our flannel clad guests. First of all, Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. Hello, Chris Check.
Cy, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being
here.
Well,
it is my studio, I guess.
Did you give a choice? No, but
it's not mine.
Actually, it's nice to have you here because we haven't done it in a long time. Like, doesn't it feel like it's been a while?
I've been traveling, and so have you, by the way. We were in New Orleans together.
Yep. Oh, that's why we missed the last one. Yeah, we were in New Orleans for the Gilbert Keith Chesterton Society.
May I tell all your listeners, Cy Kellett made his debut at the annual conference of the Gilbert Keith Chesterton Society run by our dear friends.
I wore a beautiful gown. Debut
means in the South. Yeah, no, it run by our friends Dale Alquist and the great Joe Grabowski. And Cy gave a talk on Walker Percy. Thought of Walker Percy, and it was the best talk of the conference.
Thank you, Chris.
It was. You stole the show. And by the way, I was on the program too, so the bar was set pretty high.
Yep, and it was a great conference, I got to say. It was a lovely conference. It was such nice,
they
good people.
Are suffused with joy and mirth and a little bit of weirdness. I love
all
those
the good things. All yep. the good things. Yeah, and it makes you happy to see people who are not—they're not controversialists in the sense of they're looking for some kind of problem. They're looking for a joyful way to present the faith and share the faith. It's exciting.
Yeah, and by the way, in the midst of modernity, they're not. I mean, I guess you have a couple of the Luddite types in there or whatever, but mostly it's just people say, look, We know we have to operate here in the modern world and evangelize in the modern world, and we think that G.K. Chesterton is the perfect example of someone who did that.
Yeah. You mentioned Joe Grabowski, who...
He's great.
Does he run the Society for Dale? I don't know his job.
I think he does all the work, and Dale is the pretty face, pretty much, at this point.
I'm glad you mentioned Joe, because this morning I got an email from Joe Grabowski asking if he was on flannel panel, because I had sent... I only have two Joes in my email, and I sent it to the wrong Joe, our other guest for flannel panel, Joe Heschmeyer. I'm sorry. If you didn't see the preparation materials for this, Joe, that's okay. Joe Grabowski did.
Actually, can we just let Joe Heschmeyer go and bring Joe
Grabowski? Can we bring Joe Grabowski in? Yes!
This is great. I think, last time we had Siobhan make a surprise appearance, and everyone decided they liked her better.
Yep.
Yeah, that's why we're never having her on again. No, oh, my gosh. She was better than everybody. So that's it.
I mean, we're not clearing high bars here, but yeah.
I have to say, Joe, I'm Joe Heschmeyer. That is, I'm very proud of you. From the very first moment we saw you today, you were wearing flannel. You did not forget your flannel for the flannel panel.
I was wearing a different shirt earlier, and then I actually was able to run home and change shirts at lunchtime, and my daughter saw me, and I'm wearing, just for the record, I'm wearing like pink shorts. I mean, like salmon colored.
How long are they? First of all, how long?
They've got to be. They're
not short shorts, right?
No.
Like, we can't see
Richard Simmons. Richard Simmons.
Not like 1970s basketball player.
Okay. All right. Because that was an image we were getting in here.
Right. No.
So you're wearing.
But they don't match. They don't match, is what I mean to say. And they're shorts.
Yeah.
And my daughter sees me and says, are you dressed up for mass? And I was on the one hand proud of her knowing that you dressed up for mass at 5, not proud of her idea of what dad getting dressed up looks like. And I want to stress, I would not wear this to mass.
What would your pastor say if you wore pink shorts and a blue flannel shirt to mass?
That's a great question. I am afraid to find out.
Yeah. Some wouldn't say anything. They're just happy that you're there. And I actually, frankly, I think that is the correct attitude. In most cases, if people are there, just welcome them. But he knows that you're a world-famous Catholic apologist. He would probably scold you for your attire?
I went to seminary with the pastor of both the churches that we go to in the city. So I've been friends with both of the men who are now spiritual fathers to me.
Oh.
And so it creates a nice dynamic. And one of them pointed out a hymn that we had used in church recently and asked my thoughts about it. As he's processing back, he nudges me and
what'd you think of that?
Asked me about it.
Did you have a view? Did you have an opinion about it?
I did.
Was it a bad?
I won't.
Oh, like, you know what? I don't want to get you in trouble at your home.
The tune
People
was
are
good.
Putting
the
hard
tune
work
was
in.
Good because yeah. It's to the tune of the old French carol that famously is the tune of "Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence." But it talks about the earthly Jesus and cosmic Christ in this way that is very strange.
Yeah.
Where I actually think it's orthodox, but it sounds real weird.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. But what can you do if you're in church? Sing. But you two don't have that theory. If I hear it and it's clearly heretical to me, I won't sing it. But if it's even on the margin, I'm going to sing. I think you're supposed to just sing.
I don't sing FUBU songs. I don't know if you're
of
the right
age. Do you know what a FUBU
song
is?
So FUBU was briefly a clothing line within the African American community, and FUBU stood for For Us, By Us.
Oh, For Us, By Us.
And so music that is FUBU, music that is For Us, By Us, where we sing about how great
we are the light of the world.
Yeah, we are the ones who've been sung throughout history. Yeah. It's just like the narcissistic hymns, whether they're theologically heretical, strictly speaking, or not, what are we doing?
I think you guys are. I love the narcissistic hymns. For some reason, I feel extra special when we're singing.
I finally feel seen. Yeah, I don't know why.
I have some hymns that I just can't. There are a couple of modern ones that I'm not bothered by. Maybe one or two.
But it does feel to me that we're past the worst of liturgical.
Clearly, we hit a nadir
at some point in the 70s or 80s. And I don't like.
Didn't he get hit by that one car? It was like unsafe at any speed.
Dan Sheep.
We hit a nader.
The Corsair.
So, look, don't make us work on the puns. At least make them something that's.
Is it the Corvair?
We're not veering off into Ralph Nader now. The two of you, knock it off. All right, we're going to get to the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. If I have your permission, gentlemen, to move to the news of the day from a Catholic perspective, I will just say this summer, as a matter of fact, this very month is the 56th anniversary of the Woodstock Music Festival on Yasgur's Farm there in New York. One of the great cultural watersheds, apparently, because there's endless documentaries, books, reflections, songs, famous Joni Mitchell song, of course, about the thing. 460,000 youth gathered for this important event. And this month, 56 years later, on that same month, August, 56 years later, a million youth, so more than double the size group, gathered. And had you heard about that in the news? Have you seen the documentaries and read the books or the pop songs being written about it or anything like that?
No.
No, I found out about it this morning from you.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know about it before that?
Oh, man.
We both taught each other something. Because remember, you taught me something today.
Remind me?
Which one is the fifth commandment?
Oh, that's right. Yes.
You said, well, that's a violation of the fifth commandment. And I said, which one is the fifth? Yeah. And you were like, oh, my gosh, this guy's the host.
You're not going to say what the violation was.
Yeah, it sounds a little ominous.
Boxing, I think. Were we talking about boxing
or combat sports? What I said is unnecessarily putting your body at a risk of injury without sufficient reason.
I was pitching to Chris the idea that we should do a debate between our own apologists about combat sports and whether or not they're moral.
Right.
And
should it be like a verbal argument or like Muay Thai?
No, don't do Muay Thai because some of these people are trained. And so don't do that.
Yeah, that means very Thai.
All right. So you see by the tenor of my question, my point is, look, the Catholic Church regularly draws millions of people to these huge cultural events. And they don't mean anything to the TV news or to the world in the way that much smaller events are seen as absolutely seminal. But a million young people, gathered with the Pope just less than a month ago.
By the way, there are larger such gatherings. I was speaking to a gentleman I met recently who's doing excellent missionary work, education work in Uganda. And there was a mass for the martyrs of Uganda, which is just, what, like a couple of months ago, that feast, I think? Joe?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I didn't know the fifth commandment, so don't ask
me. Ugandan martyrs is at the beginning of June.
Okay, it's, yeah, so about a couple of months ago.
Divine response to Pride Month.
Yeah, multiple millions at this mass.
In Uganda. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you
they have a special stadium that is built for this annual mass. For the purpose of this mass.
Wouldn't you love to go to that? I'd like to go to be with millions of Catholics at a mass. I mean, some people don't do well in crowds, though. How do you feel about crowds?
I'm not a crowd person.
You're not a crowd person?
No.
Joe, would you do the crowd?
I like crowds.
I'd do it in
a
minute.
Going to big papal masses. I've done it before. I saw Benedict when he was in Washington, D.C. It was an amazing experience.
I saw John Paul II when he was in Washington, D.C.
I've never you guys have...
I wish.
I was in high school.
It's too late to do it now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, half the country of East Timor came out, like literally half of the country. Are you aware of that, Joe? Do you remember that?
That's amazing.
Half the country came out for a mass. The other half had to like keep the electricity running and like they were busy. they couldn't come out. But 50% of the people of a country came out for a single mass.
You know, okay. We talk a lot about the really exciting signs of life in places like sub-Saharan Africa. I got to say, there are these spots in, you know, Oceania, if you want to call it that, that are really exciting. You know, like East Timor, it's this breakaway part of what had been Indonesia. Indonesia is the largest Muslim country on earth. And East Timor is this incredibly Catholic place of people who care about their faith and know why they're Catholic. And, you know, Papua New Guinea, just down the road, so to speak, if you've got a boat. I know Deacon Harold Birxivers spoke there. And I think, like, the president of Papua New Guinea met him, and it was like on TV and everything. Like,
he had a motorcade. So excited. I'm still so mad at him about that. I'm like, you got a motorcade? He's like, yeah, I got a motorcade.
It's amazing. So it's just, there's something so beautiful about a people that take the faith that seriously and get that excited over, you know, obviously the Pope coming is a big thing, but to get that excited over not the Pope coming, to just have someone come and share the faith, that's is such a beautiful witness.
Si, where were these million young people gathered?
Outside of Rome. I don't know the...
It was near the airport, right? Was
I actually don't know. I just know outside
some airport, right? Or maybe a military base, or...
I know
that
the one thing, the only photograph I saw was when they set up confession booths on the... what's the big thing? The circus, Maximus.
Circo Massimo.
Yeah. Thousands and thousands of people came to confession.
That's really edifying to see.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is.
All right, we got to take a very quick break. We're going to continue with we got a lot of great news of the world from a Catholic perspective, but I want to get my I just want to get to the contrast between the absolute fawning over things like Woodstock, which are frankly relatively small cultural events that take
it's
on
like a little yellow bird.
Like why? Yeah, that's right. A little tiny little Woodstock. Why? I got it, Joe. I don't expect.
I'm sorry, I threw you off, and maybe that's.
I just want you to know that I got your brilliant. Really, brilliant is too mild a word. Your brilliant pun. who's running this culture that the important things don't get covered and the silly things do? Right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
As the leader in Catholic event coverage, EWTN brings you unmatched access to this Jubilee year's most powerful moments. On September 7th, we'll report live from Rome with exclusive behind-the-scenes content for the much-awaited canonization of Blessed Carlo Acutis, who inspired many with his faith and tech-savvy evangelization. Carlo, who died at 15 in 2016, is now on track to become the first millennial saint.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I do think one of the things that is people are starting to realize that I think got overlooked for a couple generations is that the television news is not the real world. It's television news. Everything there is being captured by a camera because the camera person wanted to capture that. It's being filtered by editors and reporters and packaged for you. And so what you get is not, you're not getting closer to reality by watching the evening news. You're getting farther from reality. You might learn some facts, like you might learn what the temperature is going to be tomorrow, or you know, that there was an earthquake in Russia or something. And those are important facts. But the sum total of a 30-minute broadcast value in facts is probably less than 30 seconds worth of. The rest of it is all something being manufactured for ratings. And I think we say this intellectually, but we always forget it. And we let the news form our consciousness, to form our way of seeing the world. And so things that are trivial, really trivial, like the Woodstock Festival, are remembered literally six decades later. And the fact that twice that number of young people came out just one day this month to visit with the Pope is already forgotten.
So the Woodstock event, I don't know if I'm prepared to call it trivial, but I think what I will agree with you on is that it's an event that was expanded on or almost created after the fact.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it was a two-day concert. It rained one of the days.
Well, okay. Yeah. Right.
But it's in the reporting and the remembering or
the reminiscing and the romanticizing and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something kind of cool about the experience, but not at the level of let's keep talking about it 60 years later. I was actually talking with my in-laws about this recently. We were watching that new Bob Dylan documentary. And it's quite good. Timothy Chalamet is a more than passable.
It's not a documentary, Joe.
Biopic. Sorry.
The first two-thirds are good.
He seems like a real jerk when he goes electric, which I think is actually a pretty fair.
I like Dylan better when he's a jerk. Yeah.
You know who does a great job in that movie?
Who? I know
Ed Norton.
How did he not win something for that? He was brilliant. He was the best performance in that
movie. Superb in that show.
Wonderful.
As
Pete Seeger.
Yeah, Pete Seeger.
An absolutely brilliant parody performance of Pete Seeger. I want to say parody, but he's not. He was really, Pete Seeger was a parody of himself.
I thought it was a very affectionate performance
of
Pete Seeger.
That's true.
Yeah.
But Pete Seeger, you know, totally sincerely saying things like a fellow traveler, you know, where you go, okay, good for you, Pete. You know, go ahead, Joe. You were about to say something.
Well, I was going to say is it begins with HUAC, like the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Yeah.
This is technically sort of relevant, but my sister-in-law commented on the sheer number of times Hollywood has to remind you of how bad Joe McCarthy was. And they just can't let it go. And it's wild that someone who is now 40 and is too young to have experienced this, to see people of an older generation who are singularly obsessed with this time Hollywood was treated unfairly in Hollywood's view, and how much Hollywood wants to remind everyone of that. Like, there's an obsession with it. And I think you do see a certain thing with Woodstock that's kind of the same, but not a slight, but just... This is your own personal high or low, and you're making everyone listen to the story one more time.
And there isn't any room at all for, what do we want to say? Maybe even a middle of the road narrative. There were communists in Hollywood. Actually, there are today.
Right. There was no question about that.
There were members of the Communist Party.
I mean, Pete Seeger was married to a communist who was the daughter of pretty outspoken communists.
Yes. But, you know, Pete Seeger later apologized for his embrace of Soviet Russia. And how many other people did that? I do admire Pete Fair. Seeger for saying he was wrong about so he never said he was wrong about anything else. But, you know, to say that he was wrong about that, but that what that reflects is that there's a kind of imagine if Pete Seeger had been sympathetic to the Nazis. I hate to make that but comparison because it does get tired, but. Being a communist you were a wayward young boy, but if you were even for a minute a whiff of Nazi about you, you're a horror forever. There's no redeeming right. you in the public eye. But I do think there's this kind of, I think that some of this comes from that the idea of progress, that there's an idea of progress as constantly pushing boundaries and shattering things and breaking things. Like, I just watched a wonderful documentary on Nichols and May, the really revolutionary comics, Mike Nichols and, is it Elaine May? From the 1960s. And they really are revolutionary comics. But part of what they did was to lower the standards of what was acceptable
yes.
to joke about.
Yes.
You know, like, oh, like they really pushed the boundaries when they joked about abortion. Yeah, but they also were joking about abortion. Like, that's, so, right. like, help me see where that's progress. So there's a way in which Woodstock is good because it's shattering something. It's
right.
changing the, and the meeting with the Pope, who cares? It's the same old thing.
The push the boundaries is a great euphemism for becomes more scatological. It's supposed to be we're more creative or avant-garde or whatever it is. But really what it means is we've just become more savage.
Yes, it's clear we are more savage than we were. And that'll get into the next story we're going to cover. But yeah, that's right. You can't celebrate everybody meeting with the Pope because somehow that's just hearkening back to bad things. And the good things are always in front of us. If we just smash a few more, standards, if we just crater a few more kind of precious traditions, then we'll finally be free of all this. That, it seems to me anyways.
I think the meeting with the Pope is a source of a lot of hope and inspiration for people. And I think it is a manifestation of a theme that we talk about on this show on a fairly regular basis. And that is the very, very good work that is being done in the Catholic media world and available because of social media, because of the internet, which of course we know is also a conduit for many, many bad things. But it's not a space that we can cede to the bad guys. And so many young people are finding out or learning again about the love and mercy of Jesus Christ by virtue of, who was the young guy who was here just yesterday? Franco.
Franco, yeah, Franco TV, the Franco TV on Instagram.
Yeah, what is that guy, like 18 years old?
He's 22, I think. He said he was 22. Yeah, he's a very young guy.
Well, I mean, Joe, bear with me. He had never heard of Cary Grant.
That's how young he is. He's never heard of Cary Grant.
So he came here dressed in a black turtleneck. Was he on TV yesterday?
Yeah, he had a black turtleneck.
Yeah, if you were watching, he had a black turtleneck and black trousers on, and I said to him, you look like you're getting ready to rob an art gallery or steal some diamonds or something. And I said, you look like Cary Grant to catch a thief. And he says, who's Cary Grant? He says, who's Cary
wow.
Grant?
Yeah. But this kid...
Okay, look, I was not born... I mean, Cary Grant...
No, he was the biggest... He was the
was
biggest or second biggest movie star, third of
yes.
his career.
I'm not sure this is entirely an age thing, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. It's like, to not know who Cary Grant is, you don't need to have been alive during his lifetime.
Chris and I had an amazing experience one day talking about Charlie Chaplin. Do you remember the day?
Yes. There was staff employees.
Two
of
young
answers.
Staff were in the conversation with us. The four of us are standing in the hall.
I'm going to name one of them.
Don't name. But we started talking about Charlie Chaplin, and they both said, "Who's Charlie Chaplin?"
Yeah.
And we were
wow.
like,
"True story."
Wow, the world just it goes on. But I think that's
actually saying something like, "Who's Leonardo da Vinci?" Now, look, I'm not saying that Chaplin was the genius that Da Vinci was, but he was a, he was a comic genius. There's
yes,
no question.
Right. So, and a communist, by the way.
Yeah, but, yeah, for sure. For sure. But it just seems very, so actually this, I think there's something at work here, and it's the contraction of, what do you call it, Joe? The memory timeline or
it's
something.
It's very short now.
It's extremely short. And that, by the way, is one of the effects of the new media.
But then people discover stuff too, though. Like, you know what's going to happen is in a few years, somebody's going to make some kind of meme of Charlie Chaplin boxing or Charlie Chaplin going through the machine, you know, these classic Charlie Chaplin images. And then people are going to be like, there's going to be a revival of Charlie Chaplin. And people will be a rediscovery of the great Charlie Chaplin. That'll probably happen for Cary Grant. So it's weird. Everything is forgotten, but nothing is forgotten. Nothing is permanently forgotten.
I think memory is dramatically contracted, especially on...
Oh, I mean, there's actually good evidence on that score. I mean, I think we have to balance this thing of how much is the sort of generational narcissism all of us experience, where, you know, the bands of your teenage years are just objectively the greatest, no matter when you were born. And, you know, the people who are really influential kind of in your lifetime, like, we don't want to do basically to Charlie Chaplin what other people do to Woodstock. On the other hand, there are people who legitimately have transcendent legacies that go well beyond their own time and place. And it is kind of a bad sign if we're losing that, if we're losing that part of culture.
Well, that happens in the church. You know, I'll talk about what I mean when we come back, but recently did a little video on the Beguines, you know, women who are devoted to Christ in the Middle Ages. And people are like, I thought women were stuck in the home in the Middle Ages. All right, we'll be right back. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Steve Dawson, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme? Go make disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, our guest. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. We've all got flannel shirts on. That means we're doing flannel panel today, which is the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. Are either of you familiar with the news site? And I maybe should put that in air quotes. I don't know. But the news site, Vox, Vox.com, V-O-X. Are you familiar with it?
I am,
in fact.
And they do...
I know of it. Familiar, maybe overstating it.
There's two things that I don't like in the media. Actually, there's about a million things that I don't like in the media.
I'm trying to figure out what that list of two is.
But two I don't like. Fact checkers. I don't like fact checkers because they're never actually checking facts. They're always checking something that's nearly a fact. And explainers. When someone says they're going to explain to me something, I feel like... It's almost always a 24-year-old reporter who knows nothing about the topic and talked to, you know, got some sources. And I feel like you didn't explain anything. So this is just my curmudgeonly. But the Vox is famous.
I love the idea of both of those things.
What?
Like, I think if you can actually do factual checking and explainers, that'd be wonderful. But the problem is both of them have been pretty quickly weaponized to make ideological and political points.
Snopes is a great example of this.
Snopes has very good stuff, and then they have stuff that undermines their credibility.
Yes.
And it's very frustrating because there is an actual place for someone to just say, you said there were 52 states and there are 50, where it's just you are objectively wrong on this. But unfortunately, we don't want to respect the bounds of it. Like, so here, in a lot of ways, it's a victim of its own success. So as I understand it, the history of this is, these were the most successful parts of online newspapers, the fact check and the explainer, because people want to figure out what's going on and they want to say, I just heard this thing on TV. Is it true? And so they just did more and more of those. But only so often is it a simple, clear-cut case of this is factually true or untrue. Frequently, it's like, will this help or hurt the economy? And who knows?
Exactly.
We do explainers at Catholic.com all the time. I mean, we don't call them explainers, but we explain a church teaching or a practice.
That's what I was saying. Did I say I love explainers, right? Did I say
my least favorite site.
By the way, you know who does very good explainers is The Pillar, and they call them explainers.
Oh yeah, they do. That's true. Yeah. Well, over at Vox, they love their explainers, and I often feel more confused by the explainer than the question that they're explaining. But Ali Volpe, a reporter at Vox, just did one. Are we in a crisis of rudeness? And I love the headline. I know the reporter doesn't write the headline, but it feels to me like the whole world is ruder than it used to be. But this is often a problem of people, you know, you pass 50 and then you pass 60 and everybody's getting ruder. Are they, or are you just, is just the bloom off your rose? And so I was very interested to read it. And I have to say, Ali Volpe did a nice job. She did a nice job of reporting on this.
What is the headline?
So are we in a crisis of rudeness?
So can I just say something about headlines here? Because I think I've noticed this, especially in the last couple of years. So I think it's been going a lot longer. All headlines now online. Whereas an actual headline in a newspaper would be a short declarative statement of what the article was about.
Yeah.
But this is because of the phenomenon of click.
Yeah, you're more likely to. Yeah, that's probably right. Was a time when you really shouldn't have put a question mark in a headline. That wouldn't.
Dewey beats Truman? Question mark.
They probably should have had a question mark on that one. You're right. That would have saved a lot. And then, of course, the subhead says, why it feels like people are more impolite than ever. Of course, they're not going to be able to explain that. You can't explain my feelings, Vox, but thank you for trying. But they do pay this off in general with a good article on, are we ruder? Is our society ruder? And I just want to know what the two of you think. If I just, on an impressionistic sense, do you think that we're ruder than we used to be?
Yes.
I do as well.
You do? Okay, that encourages me because I just thought, well, I'm aging.
I think that's actually part of it. I'm going to give a caveat at yes. But yes, I think that even when you take into account all of the factors where we might just be dealing with different social codes, there is also just a rise in indifference to the feelings of others.
Dress is an excellent example of this. Here we are kind of dressed.
We're all dressed in our flannel. Yes.
Yeah, casually. But
but everything's casual.
It is, including a church. It's ball caps in restaurants. You see grown men my age and older, wearing ball caps inside a restaurant.
Yeah,
that's rude.
Is that rude or is that just a change in the standard?
Rude?
What's rude about that?
Because men don't wear hats indoors.
Okay, but you would concede.
The Italians have this phrase that just is non si fa, like it is not done. Can you not have pizza and pasta together?
It's
just
not
non si fa. That's not how we do things.
And we love the Italians for that. But what falls under the category of what's not done changes over time. There was a time when this was not done, but it is. You know, there was a time when you're wearing a tie without a tie pin. Like, it's not done. But, you know, today you wear a tie without a tie pin. There was a time when, you know, like...
Even tuxedos were, like, dressed down. Like, they were like what a servant would wear as opposed to proper evening wear.
Yeah, I don't have a dinner jacket. I'm stuck in my tuxedo.
Exactly. Yeah, right. And I'm inclined to think now we regard a tuxedo as fairly fancy.
It says it's maximum. It's top fancy. You can't get fancier than a tuxedo now.
That's why
Chris made me stop wearing them to work. He
one.
Told me, no more tuxedos, man. You're making everybody look bad.
The old headmaster, God rest his soul, of my high school, the Heights, Robert Jackson, used to tell us that if we loosened our necktie while walking to the bus stop, to the Metro bus in Washington, D.C. to go home, we were being rude to... a construction worker or someone that we might, or anyone that we might pass on the street.
And explain the thinking behind that. Because I do think, especially here in Southern California, that is foreign, that way of thinking.
Okay, well,
is
so first
foreign.
Of all, this is Washington, D.C. or Bethesda, Maryland in the
1493.
late 70s or okay. Early 80s. So I'll allow a little bit of what Joe was saying there in terms of mores changing. Is mores the word?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he insisted that it showed disrespect, and I think some of it derives from station, right, in society, and what people's roles are, and dressing for that which you are undertaking. So, for example, let me think of a different example. The United States Marines have, of the American Armed Forces, the most magnificent of the uniforms. They just do. This is an
objective fact.
No, it is.
Yeah. Fact check.
And as a Marine, you've had this fact check, yes.
It is. But to me, it's fitting because of the important work that they do, their elite nature, their elite status, all the history that attaches to and culture and tradition that attaches to the United States Marines. So when someone is, a high school student at a private Catholic school, that's his station, and it's appropriate to dress that way. And if he's not dressing that way, or if he's dressing down, it's in a strange way, isn't it, sort of an insult to the person who actually is a blue-collar laborer or something of that nature. I'll give you one more example.
Well,
my old boss, Tom Fleming, used to say he never wore jeans. For him, casual was khakis. And he just said, okay, this is – jeans are the preserve of laborers or farmers or –
Internet billionaires now.
Well, yeah, precisely. I mean, I'm wearing them myself right now.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit hypocritical. I think there is a kind of rudeness in there.
But I wonder if that has to do with something that's good, which is a diminishment of class distinctions.
I'm not sure that's good.
You're not sure that the diminishment of class distinctions is good?
No, I'm not sure it is good. I'm not necessarily sure that's good.
Yeah, I don't know. Why are you laughing, Joe, about our conversation?
I mean, you guys just played into type perfectly there. I think if you were to ask what are their positions on class distinctions going to be, I think 99% of regular listeners could have gotten both of your positions correctly.
It's funny, because I'm low class and Chris is high class.
See, the difficulty here is the suggestion that class distinction denotes a kind of a superiority, but I actually think what it properly denotes is a responsibility in society. There's a reason the President of the United States should always wear a necktie. It frankly was scandalous when Barack Obama stopped wearing a necktie.
Because of
his station, because of the office. You know, here's another one.
Can't this change?
Jimmy Carter, who actually I'm sort of sympathetic for, though I think kind of his legacy is overstated as
he was attacked by a rabbit. All right, if you need, all right.
But I mean, there he is in the Oval Office with his jean jacket. And that's just, that is inappropriate to the Oval Office.
I don't disagree with that, but I do think that you mentioned the Marines, you mentioned the presidency. These are governmental
functions.
Carried
his own briefcase. Come on.
Yeah.
Can I go back to the original question?
Yes, go ahead.
And try to put this in a context. I think when we're talking about this, the problem is this. Rudeness roughly is a violation of the respect owed to someone else.
Yes.
And that is heavily influenced by culture. So you've got two things. One, you've got somebody doing something that is not rude in their world and is rude in yours. So this is going to be different geographically. It's going to be different by age. It's going to be different by station and everything else. Like, there are times where you've gone to a party and you're overdressed or underdressed because you guessed wrong what the norms were going to be. That's not rude, because that's just you misguessing what the expectations are. So in that sense, I think a lot of times when people get older, they feel like the world's getting ruder because they're operating with a different set of rules than the ones that existed when you were coming up in the world.
That's why it's hard to say objectively to answer the question. Right. I'm going to let you finish, Joe. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Okay.
But my point is, that's why it's objectively hard to say, are we ruder or is this just a change in manners?
The other half is, when it's not ignorant, it's indifferent. So somebody who is doing what is polite in their culture or generation or geography or whatever, even if that is rude in yours, that's not rude in the sense that I think we should be talking about. Like, somebody slurping because slurping is a sign of respect for the cook at the end of a bowl of soup, and somebody else's culture says that's extremely rude. Everyone should, you know, try to figure out what's appropriate in the setting they're in.
Yes.
But there's a difference between that and someone just saying, I'm going to slurp because I don't care. Or somebody, you know, I was in Los Angeles last week, and someone was smoking pot openly on the subway. And I walk on with my three kids. And fortunately, the guy actually, I think he felt a little embarrassed. He put it out, and my son loudly complained about the smell of smoke. While sitting next to him.
So, I just want to say, though, Joe, you took your kids on the subway in L.A.
I should have expected
what happened to you? What happened that you thought that was a good idea? I got to take the break. I'm going to let you finish. But it sounds like where we're getting to is that, at least to me, it sounds like you're saying, look, if I go to Japan and I don't bow properly, the Japanese person is probably going to be perfectly gracious about that because they know, look, this is an American. He doesn't understand how we're supposed to do this. Fine. But it sounds like what you're saying is, here in America, let's say we're in America now, we're all living in different worlds, so extreme. Like, we're not a united society anymore, so I don't know what I owe the other person. No longer clear.
I think the Japanese person is not exactly going to react the way that you've just described.
Oh, they're lovely, the Japanese.
I suppose it depends which class they're. I think they take these cultural norms or these behavioral customs much more seriously than we do in what's left of the Christian
West. But they're going to know that I'm not Japanese.
I think they're going to have the expectation that you carry on conversation in the way that they do. And
fair enough. Yeah. All right. Well, let's come back. We'll tackle this more. Are we in an epidemic of rudeness? Vox online news source asked the question and basically said yes. I have a quiz for these gentlemen that we're going to go through in the next segment about rudeness, which things are rude, which things are not rude. But I'm wondering now, especially given what Joe said, is the world just so fractured that nobody knows what they owe anyone else in terms of manners? Right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on, we'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
It's the freshest, cleanest, best-smelling James the Less ever. Yes, he can dance.
It's little. I prefer James.
But can he become Catholic?
My world has sort of been turned upside down, and I'm starting to like it.
Ooh.
an all-new season of James the Less, streaming now at EWTN.com/James the Less.
Now, welcome back. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, Chris Check, our guest, president of Catholic Answers, Joe Heschmeyer, our guest, apologist here at Catholic Answers. We're doing flannel panel, which is, we do it about once a month. We missed a month because of some travel, but we tackle the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And I actually am concerned about this rudeness thing. And I must admit that I am baffled by it. And like, is this person being rude to me, or is it just that I don't know what manners are anymore, like what the proper manners are anymore? Because there was a time when I would say thank you to people and they would say no problem. And I would think, well, that's rude. Like, I just said thank you. The proper response is you're welcome. But then
it was
Jimmy Akin who pointed out to me, it just changed. The language changed. Get over yourself. And I was like,
well,
it
actually seems ruder to the younger audience to say you're welcome, because then you're acknowledging implicitly, yeah, you did inconvenience me. Whereas you're supposed to just pretend it was not an inconvenience in the first place.
The one that I really loathe is I'm good.
I'm good.
I'm good. Can I get you a cup of coffee? I'm good. It's no thank you.
But you know what you should say to them? You should say, none are good.
No,
Heavenly Father.
I'm really grateful for the way Joe unpacked this and provided the principles and the categories, which, of course, he's great at given his line of work and everything. I'm much better, I think, or I'm stuck in the world of examples. I know, for example, that if you go to an Italian city and dress the way a typical American tourist dresses,
yeah,
with the fanny pack and
or shorts, no matter the heat. Yeah. Italian men will not be caught wearing shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
God bless them.
Or the what are the things that women wear now? The leggings or whatever.
And yoga pants.
Yeah, yoga pants.
Everyone's doing yoga everywhere, I guess.
Here's the thing: if you actually dress like a civilized person when you go to Rome or to an Italian city, they take note of that, and you get better service.
But you yourself said there's a difference between etiquette and manners.
Sure, sure, sure.
And so that is a matter of etiquette.
It's also manners. There's overlap here, isn't there? Well, here's another one. Here in the United States, even in Southern California and San Diego, there are restaurants with dress codes. You at least have to have a jacket on.
No way.
Yes.
No
way. I can name two.
I have been to the finest restaurants in San Diego. I've been to Olive Garden, the one down there. What are you talking about?
Do you know what Todd said about Olive Garden?
What?
He said, I'd rather eat out of the dumpster at Olive Garden than eat at Olive Garden.
I didn't know. I don't even know what that means.
It's just Olive Garden is
but
so bad.
But I do have a feeling like you're, like, I'm not talking about not dressing well or, you know, our parents' generation wore hats and wear hats.
So what I'm saying is there's even restaurants in Southern California where something is happening in this restaurant. There is an event that's underway, a celebration, a respect for the chef who's put time into doing something other than, you know, boil noodles and boil some ragu over the top of it. There's something underway here that the person who's participating in it dresses accordingly for. That's good manners.
That is good manners. But Joe's example is, I got on the subway and they're smoking pot. Like, I feel like you're at a different level than the societal. I don't feel it's a societal crisis if someone didn't wear a jacket where they should have worn a jacket. I do feel it's a societal crisis if people are smoking pot, or even worse than that, people are on the airplane watching what is essentially pornography when there are children on the airplane. To me, this is a total social breakdown. I don't even know why American Airlines, you should be ashamed of yourself, American Airlines, for what you make available for people to watch. And I'm sure it's the other airlines too, but all my miles are with American, so I'm mad at them. But that's a total societal. Adults should know, I should not be watching this on an airplane if there's a single child. I mean, frankly, if there's
anyone,
you shouldn't be watching it. But yeah. I don't want to monitor your whole behavior. But where is the basic sense that this should not be on an airplane? Where it's a few hours. Can you go without your pornography till we land? Yeah, that's all I'm asking.
I think the heart of what I would say is the rudeness we have to worry about is when it comes from an attitude of indifference towards the dignity or needs of others. You know, like when you're approach is just that you don't care if you're inconveniencing, annoying, off-putting, or scandalizing other people. That's when it goes from just like a social faux pas to an actual moral failing.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that's an important difference. Like, I'm not worried about the person not wearing a jacket, but there are plenty of things people do where it ranges from, I'm going to annoy you. I'm going to have a conversation on a subway or on an airplane, and everyone else is just going to have to sit there while I'm loudly having a conversation on the phone.
I had this experience recently in an airport.
Yeah.
It's outrageous. Or look, this is a generational one in the other direction. Don't leave your phone on sound. It shouldn't even have that feature unless it's an emergency. It should be silent or vibrate, and then you just return the missed calls.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'll reverse one, too. I don't want to just act like it's just the young people who are rude. If you're an elderly couple and you're not sure whether to turn left or right, step out of the elevator before you conclude the conversation. Just get out of the way.
What is this?
What are you doing?
Here? What is this?
Or you know what? If you're older than I am, just don't drive in the fast lane. Just don't do it. What you think is fast is not what the rest of society thinks is fast. Stop it. But I do think there's basic, like, look, there's the person who when the speeding kid comes up behind them and rides their bumper, won't move over out of the way. And there's the person who will. And the person who won't is not a good person. You may think what you're doing is a good thing. Get out of that other person's way. The only thing to do, the only way to respond to that is with good manners. And I do feel on the roads, on the airplanes, in our public spaces, we are not considerate of one another. There is a lower consideration of one another.
I think there was a time when there was a concerted effort in the home and even in grade schools to have formal training in manners. What's the Oscar Wilde expression, manners before morals, right?
Flannery O'Connor's great book was Mystery and Manners. And I do think you can't have a society without manners. You can't have it. It's not a society if nobody has manners. It's something else. It's just a battle.
I would add one point just because I don't want people to get the wrong impression. There is a way that manners are sometimes weaponized to fight against morality and truth, where it's like, oh, it's rude to call that person out for their sin, or it's rude to talk about your faith. Or, you know, so there is a way in which I think everything we're approaching this from a certain perspective of what people understand manners and etiquette to be, but we should at least be aware that there are people who have a culture of, you know, in New England, in New York, whatever, we don't talk about religion. And so if you share your faith, you're actually being rude. Or if you challenge somebody's decisions about how they want to live their life or fill in the blank, that's rude. And that is a weaponization of a good thing for an evil end. And in those cases, very clearly, you have to be faithful to the truth, not kowtow to a kind of a false morality or false manners.
It is a tough one. I do feel like part of the reason why we can't resolve this is that there are so many layers like that, Joe. But I'm going to poll the two of you now, and then I have a quiz for you. Is it rude? The name of this quiz is it rude? If somebody does this thing, is it rude? But first, I'm going to poll you. Objectively speaking, I'm going to just go over the last 20 years. Let's go from since the year 2000, since the entire world ended with the computer crash in the year 2000, and we all entered the Matrix. Were you guys not aware of that? That we're all living in a matrix now?
It came out at the right time for that. Lines up.
Objectively speaking, not based on my subjective, I'm older, I can't bear as much as I could when I was young. Objectively speaking, are people ruder today than they were at the turn of the millennium?
Yes.
Yes.
Hmm. Yeah.
I think that there's more indifference to your inconveniencing other people. I think the internet, I think isolation, I think all sorts of things
didn't help manners.
People didn't
come out of COVID better behaved.
Joe calls it indifference. I would double down a little bit. I would just call it there's more self-centeredness. It's just people are more interested in themselves.
And I think there's a kind of misunderstanding of what proper assertiveness is. There's a sense of I've got to push you in order to show that you can't push me sometimes. And it's a terrible attitude. There is a proper assertiveness of the self of say, look, I need this. Could you excuse me? There's a sick assertiveness in our society now. All right, we'll do the quiz when we come back. We have to take a quick break. Joe Heschmeyer, Chris Check, our guests. It's the Flannel Panel. We're doing the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. Vox got us really talking on this. This reporter, Ali Volpe, did a nice story on is there a crisis of rudeness? The general idea here seems to be that, yes, there is. So we'll take the Is It Rude quiz. I'll tell you what I'll do, too. During the break, I'll check on the YouTube feed there. And if you've got a question you want me to ask, is it rude when this happens? I'll pick some from YouTube and we'll do that. When we come back right after this, where we're always polite, right here on Catholic Answers Live.